Welcome to the Geeks of the North, a hobby and gaming podcast with Bell Purveyors. This week I'm here with the guys, that's right, all four of us again, and we're talking about miniature gaming with kids. So why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Geeks of the North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filio, here with my co-host, Antoine Bergeron.
Hello.
Yom Le Machin.
Hi.
And B. Steve.
Hello, nurse.
Okay, I don't catch that reference.
It's from Animaniacs.
Oh, okay. I never watched Animaniacs. I know I'm a strange soul. I know a lot of people like them. I never get into it, so...
Well, we'll just add that to the stuff you don't like that everybody likes, like Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
exactly.
The list is long.
Yeah, but you know, I like stuff no one else likes, like Yom. It's really weird. Like, I guess I'm just different.
Honestly, I'm never sure on which list I am with you. It's all gray.
Well, you're in the end credits now, Yom, so.
Paul is like the Santa of Wargaming. He has a nice and not naughty list.
And where Yom falls depends on how many times I've played him that year.
How much time you spend with me with the effect where I follow the list.
Exactly. Uh-huh. I got a little checklist, you know, how many dice did Yom throw? How many models did he scrap? Yeah. How many times did he flip a table? Keep a tally. Yeah. If your total's less than a certain amount, you're on the good list. That's all.
Yeah.
I'm painting a horrible picture of you.
There should be a nap for that telling me, like, yeah, you have 50 points left on your total tally.
I'm sure there's an app for that. There's an app for everything.
Antoine, you're a web guy. It should be a simple enough app to build.
Sure.
Just build it like a web page that does it. Wow, this is so off topic already. Okay.
Yeah. I'll go through Yom pictures, and as the tally go up, I'll take sadder and sadder pics.
All right, let's try to get this back on track. So, standard format show. So, going to the hobby time. And the games we played, we've got a question of the week. And once again, it's not from Mike. Other people are actually sending us questions. This is really awesome. Not that we don't love Mike.
Inconceivable.
But it's nice to have. I know, it's crazy. And then we'll get to our main topic, which is miniature gaming with kids. You know, and how to get them in and picking games and all that fun stuff. And as always, I'll start the hobby time. So, I've been pretty prolific this... Oh, it's been a few weeks, so I guess I've had plenty of time to be prolific. So, since last we spoke, I've assembled 3 Castellacs. Those are 30k Adeptus Mechanicus. Or I guess just Mechanicus Army models for my game against Yom, which someday will happen. So, until that day, I'll just keep building more and more Adeptus stuff.
So, I need to fix a date because... just becoming harder and harder.
Well, I think I've passed 9,000 points now.
Yes.
And that's without my super heavy tank. So my number of super heavies is actually going down, Yom. So if you wait long enough, maybe...
It's going to be an all-infantry list.
Yeah. It is all-infantry now.
Proper infantry.
I got rid of the 2 tanks. I added 3 giant walking robots.
Well, that's true.
That's all good. Aside from that, I decided for my birthday, which recently passed, that I was going to start working on some Circle Orbro stuff. So I picked up a few things. So I assembled Cromac 2, Wold Guardian, Wold Weird, a Wold Wrath, a unit of Tharn Ravagers, a unit of Tharn Bloodpack, another Gorax, Getarix, which Antoine's going to do some modifications for me, a Wild Argus, a Winter Argus, Baldur 2, and a Tharn Ravager Chieftain.
Why another Gorax? You don't like the model.
Because I had another one. Okay. I didn't pick all these up. I went through my drawers and started pulling stuff out to assemble.
Mm-hmm.
And I had another Gorax.
Do you want me to convert it to?
Yep.
Ooh, I have a spare Warpulse head.
Can we get more information about that Getarix conversion, or Tonio, you will
Nothing. It's nothing super special. It's because I basically screwed up. So what happened was, I got, because I went to Adepticon, so I got the two-player battle box for free.
Sorry.
What? Wow.
Yeah, sorry, okay. Sorry, I just...
sorry, that came out of nowhere?
It's tied to the main subject, so go on.
Jeez. Anyway, yeah, so I got a two-player battle box for Hordes for free. And it came with a another Warpulf, right? The Feral Warpulf. And I don't need another one. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll pick up the Getarix conversion, like the upgrade kit, because I didn't realize we were going to re-release Getarix as a new model. So I picked up the upgrade kit, and I thought the upgrade kit was meant to convert the regular Feral Warpulf. I didn't realize that you actually need, I think you need the arms off the stalker to make it work. So,
and the two-player starter only come with the pieces for
a Feral.
For the Feral. Right?
So I built the body, I put the head on, I went to attach the arms, and then I went to put the Getarix like two-handed axe thing on. And the hands were in totally the wrong places. It didn't fit at all. I'm like, whoa. So, I'm going to have Antoine modify
the shaft the of handle. The axe. Yeah, the handle.
Yeah. To take one of the hands off. So, he's going to be holding it kind of down by his side in one hand, which is his left hand. He's going to be holding it up near the head of the axe. And I'm going to use the regular Feral hand for the other arm. So it's a very small conversion. I just have no green stuff skills, so easier for Antoine to do it.
Yeah, cutting the end from the handle and just putting regular wood under.
Okay.
And yeah. So
yeah, super super simple conversion for anyone but me.
But it's a middle part, right? Or
yeah,
yes.
So it's a bit tricky.
Not really.
Well,
okay.
It's pretty easy. Cut the pieces at both sides of the end, put a pin with the same length in between, and just fill out with green stuff. I've done similar with other weapons. So.
Didn't you do something similar to that with your... was it your Mulg you converted?
No, that was all the sculpted by hand.
Okay. My mistake then. So I assembled a bucket load of circle stuff. So I'm looking forward to trying all that stuff out. The only thing left to do is my World Wrath. I have to pin his arms on, because no amount of green stuff and glue is going to hold those things on. So I'm not even going to try. Even I won't try. So that says something. So I'm going to have to invest in some brass rods if I can find some. I don't know why gaming stores don't carry these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they should.
I'm gonna make a note to tell someone about that.
I have some for you. I'll bring them if we see each other this week.
Well, I've got to see you this week. The reason being the next thing on my list, which is I've painted a Zezzy mat. So I had I bought a bunch of 6x4 Zezzy mats. You know, because just in case I ever open a gaming store and I need 10 tables. So I painted a duplicate that I had, and we're going to cut it up and make it into two Guild Ball mats, and the extra stuff we're cutting off, we're actually going to just cut into templates to use it for rough terrain and stuff. So I've painted the whole 6x4, so whatever the strip we cut off is, it'll already be pre-painted and ready to pick cutouts. Yeah, so that's almost done, so I just have to take it to Antoine to get it cut up and get the lines put on.
Yes.
Because he'll need it for hopefully he'll need it for the weekend, or need them for the weekend, because it'll be two mats.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I need them. So, it depends on how many other mats are brought, but, yeah.
Oh, you do need them? Okay.
Yeah, one at least.
Okay, well, you'll have two, so you'll have a spare, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully I can see you tomorrow.
We'll figure something.
Yeah. Well, worst case, there's always Canada Day, right? Let's zip over and... It's not like I'm going to do stuff with my family on Canada's Day. Or if I do, I'll just try and make it in the afternoon and I'll sneak away in the morning, drop off stuff and come back. A little hour and a half joyride. Yeah. So that's it for my hobby. Games have been kind of a dry spell for me. So I tried to play a couple games of Mark III last week to give it a try, and both times it just didn't work out. One time it was going to start way too late, so there's just no way I could feasibly do it. And the other time some real life got in the way of Yom coming over to play a game against me. So no Mark III love in my house, apparently. So instead of playing Mark III on Saturday, I actually watched Antoine and Steve play Guild Ball in my house. So that was kind of cool. I watched Steve almost win.
Yes, almost.
Almost.
It was close. It was a nail biter.
The good thing is that gave you more...
motivation?
More motivation, yeah, to play the game.
Yeah. No, the game is so cool. Like, the rule set is solid. The game is fun to watch. I think if I played it, I'd be better. Like, I'd get more into it. I'm just finding it a real challenge. We'll get some gains under my belt, and hopefully things will be okay. If not, I'll have a couple mats that I can, you know, donate to the group to use. So it's all good.
No, the it's looking good. The future is bright. It's full of Gilbal and the Circle Orboros. So your future is looking bright. I like it.
Well, I don't know if a Circle is going to be my main army. It's just I want to get a Hordes army too. That's done. Mind you, I could have picked simpler armies. I think if I would have done my Everblight, it would have been like a lot easier, just because the models are less, they've got less bangles and doodads and teeth hanging off of them and whatever. And
yes, they're simpler. Yeah, they are.
Yeah, and they're still nice, right? It's just they're simpler.
Yeah, no filigree on the armor of the beast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because the beasts don't wear armor. So.
Some of them do. Nephilims.
Yeah, but no one plays with Nephilim.
Yeah.
Actually, that may not be true anymore. Who knows? Mm. Anyway, so that's it for my hobby and games. Antoine, you're up.
Yeah. It's been, 3 or 4 weeks, I think, since last recording, but I have not been able to do much on my side compared to you. So I finished the main body from the Snow Golem, from the little... What's his name? Olaf. Sculpting I'm doing for Derek. That was posed at that stage because we were wondering if I would be able to cast it. He wanted other copies for his daughter and maybe for some other guys on the Frost Grays group that mentioned they liked it. But up to now, that's not working on my side. My casting material is too old. It's not taking well, so I need to talk to him to see how the rest of the project will go. On top of that, I've done just some tiny progress on Boiler. I'm maybe at 75% completed. Boiler being one of my Guild Ball Butchers team member. And I quickly cleaned Hierarch Severius, Epic Severius. That's a commission I got from a local player. And that's it for my hobby. That's really not a lot. On the side of game, no, not much game either. So I did a bunch of demo, three different Guild Ball demos in the last 3 weeks, which is good. And that's probably 2.5 new players. One is still undecided.
Is the other player Alexi?
No, he's Alexi's all in. He had models before the demo. I gave him the demo.
And his team is painted already.
Yeah.
He has got a fully painted fisherman.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's great.
Yeah. I had one game with Steve, as Paul mentioned. I'll let Steve go over it if you want. And also a small game of Mark III with 80% G. My piggies led by Carver against his Gators led by Milok. So we still played Pack Pure, even if that doesn't no longer exist right now. 15 points is a really small game.
Yes.
But it gave us a good idea. I must be honest, I didn't see that much change compared to Mark II, but that's probably coming from the my choice of faction, caster, and side of the game, War Machine probably have more change with the I'm not sure. Is it power up the new rule or something?
Yeah, it's called power up.
Yeah.
Yeah, power up, change more. My caster is exactly the same as in Mark II, and most of the choice I had didn't really matter. So the game was cool. I liked the pre-measuring, but outside of that, felt exactly like the previous game. So
yeah, I think it's this the size of the game that affected.
Yeah, the size and playing Ords, there's less of a change than War Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And the caster doesn't change as much. So if I switch, I think maybe for Arcadius for the next couple of games, that's probably what I'll do. Because he changed a lot more than Carver did. So that might give me more of a new game feeling than I got right now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I look at my army and I don't know my casters at all anymore. Like, most of my casters have changed radically. Yeah, are the ones I like to play.
Okay. It's not the case for mine. Carver lost some rules. He didn't gain stuff. He lost stuff.
Yeah. Actually, I shouldn't say my cast. I mean, Karchev changed a lot.
Well, which was the main one you were playing recently.
So. At the end, yeah. He's changed a lot. What really changed also, like, a lot of my character jacks, which Kador always took all the time,
mm-hmm.
are not auto-includes anymore. So that makes a lot of changes to the list, and also the character jack's abilities all changed. They have the same kind of feel, but there's a lot of like tweaks to them. Like Ruin, the way he collects souls and stuff is all different, and it's not quite as OP as it was.
Yeah, in the case, everything almost I had in my list is playing the same. The Brigands got a boost, but they were already good with Carver, so they just changed how the boosts work.
Yes, you'll see the difference with other casters, but yeah, not Carver.
So the beasts are a bit better because the War Hog got 1 inch of speed more and 1/2 inch more of range in melee, but that wasn't that big with Carver because he had mobility anyway. So everything I had in my list felt the same, and the game felt the same too. So that's why probably I don't see the big change, but I'll see it more when I'll play against a War Machine opponent instead of a Nords opponent and switching caster probably, or maybe going to my trolls. It looks like they changed a bit more. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. You also don't have all the, you never took a lot of solos and stuff in your lists from what I recall. I might be wrong.
I do. There's only two in the big list.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? But if I look at my list, right, Kador always took a lot of solos, and now we can't, like, you can, but you'd cripple yourself, because everything we used to take is so expensive, like, at 5 to 7 points a model, it adds up quick.
It feels that, like that, yes.
You know, like, Iris at 7 points, you know, that's half of another unit.
Yeah, I know, on my side, Targ is 4, I think, and Maximus, the other one I'm using once in a while, is 4 or 2.
Yeah.
So,
I actually looked at him in a big Kador list.
Yeah, and he's
got the loot. So
exactly, except the look, you know.
Yeah, I didn't bring him in my list, but he's another model that hasn't changed anyway. So
yeah,
that's why I think, and that's it for me. Yom.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to add, I'm sure that, like you said, you plug in War Machine, bigger games, you'll see the difference. But okay,
I'll see the difference for the others, but I don't think I'll really see a difference in the game. Going over the cards and everything, I know the game changed, but it didn't change that much. It's not that big of a change depending on what you play. And then in my case, it isn't because I won't go full faction. I won't add Gator. I will stay pigs. So yeah, I don't really see it. I don't see the big overall.
Oh, either you will or I'll just keep being in disagreement. the fact that there's more Terran and the Jacks don't leave wreck markers, it all affects Ords also. The way the game is played now, you'll see it, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll see, but we already played with more terrain than what was needed. So, yeah, I see for other people who were playing with the strict steamroller rules, but in our case, we always added more. So, we'll see.
All right, so on my side, hobby-wise, I finished painting terrain for my personal Guild Ball pitch. So I did all kind of terrains. I based my my choices on the organized play document. So I have all the fast ground, rough ground, forest, barrier, everything. And different sizes and different options. So I've worked on that. Now they are all finished. The piece I bought from Ristol's Extraordinary Market, the market supplies, the food supplies. I don't know if you remember. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we talked about that last episode. Yep.
Now that they're finished and all the fruits and veggies are painted with like beautiful colors, it really tied up the pieces together. So it's looked pretty good. It looked pretty good. I'm pretty happy with all the field will look. And the point was to get my hobby juice back on track, and it worked. So now that the painting mojo is back, I started working on my brewers because I had time, because I didn't have any commission. And man, I'm sinking so many hours in those. I painted, it's brewers, so I painted tartan. And the way I did it, it's so tough and so long to paint. Like, it took, I don't know how many hours exactly, but I'm at least like I busted the 45 hours so far.
You know whose fault that is, right?
You what?
You know whose fault that is, right? Like, no one twisted your arm to pick that tartan.
So. You sure? Sure, so I'm looking for someone else to blame, because I just can't take all that blame. No, oh my god, I don't even know that they will look that good. I'm just like tired of looking at them. But I want to finish them for the event that's coming up, the Taco Bowl. But I don't know. After a while, it feels like a marathon. Like, you're not, like you will hit the wall. Yeah, like you don't think that you will ever finish them. Even though logically, they're almost done. But
there's no paint requirement for the Taco Bowlers, is there?
Nope.
No, but
I'm requiring models and not paper dolls. And yeah. Yom is painting them separately from the bases. So they're not playable as long as they're not done.
What he said? Oh. Yep. So that's why I'm rushing them. Well, trying to.
Yeah, 50 hours on 6 model is rushing them.
It's more like painting every night and still taking the long road for the techniques and everything. So, I don't know. Sometimes I look right at them and I'm happy with what I see. Other days I'm like, ugh, so many hours sent into that.
Oh, I understand you perfectly. I'm at 2.5 butchers painted, and I'm probably at 30 hours in, and they're supposed to be quick job to use for demos. So, yeah.
Don't worry, guys. I will bring down your average. If you look at us as a group, Steve and I will drag down your averages into reasonable painting times, and it'll all be good.
I wanted them to look good, so I wanted to put like all I could, but still, it's taking its toll. And there's someone contacted me locally for a Brewers team commission, and I don't know how I feel about that.
don't do tartan.
It's going to be simpler. It's going to be simpler, because I really, for this one, I really looked at tartans, and I really like reproduced a real pattern and not just a grid. Most people, I've looked at what people do for tartans or for brewers or the team, and most of the time they do a simple grid, and the effect your eye will apply that pattern on the shape of the fabric, and it's like you won't even see it. It's like a trick of the mind that you won't even think about it. You will see tartan where it's just a grid, and it works fine. But if, of course, I had to paint a real tartan that follows all the folds in the fabric, and no, that was my mistake. It looks good, but I mean, you will forget about it. Your eye will forget about it. So.
Yeah, I guarantee no more than 20 hours spent on 6 models combined.
That's it. That's including assembling and cleaning.
Oh,
or
yeah. Oh yeah. Cleaning.
What is all that right. Cleaning you're talking about?
There's no mold lines on these models, not that I can see anyway.
You ever heard no pain, no gain? You can't spoil. You don't feel pain anytime, so no gain for you, Paul. And lastly, I have one commission that came in, and it also need to be ready for the Taco Bowl. It's Smoke, the Season 2 Alchemist Captain.
Oh, so he's needed for Sunday?
Oh, I didn't know.
Oh, jeez.
But it's not that high. It doesn't want level my maximum level 3.
Yeah, but you still need to finish your guys, too. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll find some way.
Sleep is for the weak.
We're just gonna, you know, we're gonna call Yom, and we're just gonna hear like the Rocky training montage music in the background on every hangout session while we're painting.
Exactly.
Yeah. Worst case scenario, I'm gonna drop from the tournament to finish Smoke, and I'm gonna play Mark 3 on the same day.
Yeah, on the release event. Yeah, for sure.
It's not the perfect scenario. It's the worst case scenario. Oh, they're almost done. All right, on to games. We had two Frostgrave nights of the campaign, Frostgrave campaign. So on the first night, I faced Derek. The scenario was pretty cool. Like, you know, you remember when we talk about that that cool Frostgrave table with the floating island?
Yep.
So at that point, I describe how in this game in Frostgrave you can come up with several rules for like portals and whatever. So that game, that scenario had portals. It was still in the Lich Lord campaign, of the Lich Lord campaign, but there were several portals on the ground and some treasure chests. But there was a sideboard, and when you hit, like when you enter the portal, you have to roll randomly where you will come out, because at some point. Like one of the results was to come out in that special sideboard where there was that special treasure chest that you needed to go get. That was the whole point of the game. Like you couldn't finish until everybody was dead or someone would get that treasure. So we spent the whole game just like walking through portals and like popping up all over the place. So it, like, if you want to find a way to screw up a strategy. Like having your guy
random,
just...
random portals is the way to do
oh,
it.
Oh yeah, because like two guys enter the same portal and they will like pop up in two different places. So sometimes it was to your advantage, but other times you just like wouldn't materialize in front of three enemies. Like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Yep. Random portals. Yay. But it was lots of fun again against Derek. And in the end, he went to the side board and killed everyone, all the monsters there, grabbed the treasure, got out, and then I killed him and took the treasure. I couldn't enter the sideboard. I tried, but I just never rolled what was necessary to come into the sideboard. So I was like popping out all over the place and just, he came out with the treasure. Hey, you know what? I'm going to take the easy way.
Knowing Derek, he loved every minute of that, so.
And anyway, the second night, everybody choked because life happened and Mark 3 happened, so it was a bit, the spotlight was on the Warmer Hordes. I had 3 games of Warmer Hordes. My first 2 games, I played Striker 1, the original Battlebox Gangsta, because it was important for me to play Striker 1. It's not that different. But when I started playing in Mark 1, like back in the day, when I started playing, cards were in black and white. Okay. And I started with Striker 1. And when Mark 2 came out, my first game of Mark 2 was with Striker 1. So that's why I wanted to play Striker 1 for my first game of Mark 3. It was like an homage to my own Warmer Horse background. So I played two games. It just happened that both were against Menoth opponents. So I faced Etienne, who was playing Severus 1, and Leonard, who was playing Tyra. And I saw a big difference in the game between Mark 2 and Mark 3. Of course, I had a lot of jacks. I was playing War Machine, so I had the power-up rule. I was playing a lot of jacks, so I could see that what happened when you don't leave Rex. I could see the impact when you're facing lots of infantry and your heavy jacks now have 1 inch of melee. It changed. It's hard to imagine, but it changed a lot of things. You suddenly have a lot more target to hit, and you have more focus to hit them with. You are a lot less focus starved. Yeah, the pre-measuring that you can leave like proxy base and measure it saves a lot of time. I thought the game was really different from Mark II. Both games finished differently. Like I was winning by attrition against Etienne, and then he caster killed me. And Leonard was the other way around. Like I was losing the attrition, but then I started like taking stuff piece by piece and slowly like making points by scenario, and I won by scenario. We tried assassination, so we saw the difference in the power field. I don't even remember the name, Antoine. The when you reinforce the power field, like the leftover focus points.
All right, no idea.
Yeah, so
it used to be overboosting.
Overboosting. So
now it's reinforcing. Yeah.
We saw the big difference it made. Like if you only have a few, it makes a bigger difference. And if you camp a lot, doesn't have the same impact depending on what kind of attacks they make against you. Also, it's more worth it to make like bigger attacks, so to boost damage instead of making more attacks. So it's changed. It really changed a lot of things in that game. In those games. So my first impact of Mark III was like, wow, it's really a different game. So it's totally different from Antoine. And then on my third game, it was another night, the night that we all choked Frostgrave. I was playing the night I was supposed to play a game there and then go to Paul's, but it was too late. I was playing Darius. Yeah, I'm not starting with like the Kane 2 or Sloan or Striker 1 and Darius against the Scare 1 list. Of course, he put more jacks, but it still have mostly infantry. And it was very... Scare 1 is a lot less scarier than she was. When she has the helm of a big infantry list, she's a lot less scary. The last time I faced that, it was against Tom Guan at TempleCon, and it just like rolled over me. But in this game, Darius held his own, and he just like crushed the other army. It was like a wall of steel that was too hard to be destroyed. It was really interesting to see Darius in that light. Like his jacks were a lot more reliable. Like they either got those threat range buff or damage buff or mat fix, or they all got something more. Signar as a whole changed a lot, so it was refreshing to play Darius and not just feel like a victim. I guess that's, yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Tom Guang, because he just won something recently
with Kator. He switched to Kator because now Krix is bad. Gator's good.
And Behemoth in every list, so I imagine he'll be nerfed shortly.
I don't know. He's still worth a lot of points, so It's pretty good. Yeah, but it's pretty good,
he does a lot of work.
Yes. Oh yeah, he's really scary, the behemoth. Absolutely. I like what they did with the game. But we will talk about that, I guess, in another show. But I like what they did with the game.
Next show. Yeah. With no Steve.
Steve, when we don't have Steve on board to make him suffer to warmer hordes.
Exactly.
Steve, I'm done. What have you done?
You sure?
Yeah, you're up.
Are you still awake, Steve?
Yeah, I'm still there. Woo. Yeah, okay. I didn't fall asleep. Don't worry. So, for my hobby part, I finish painting Cosette and my mascot, Dirge, for my Guild Ball team. And I also started the base color and first wash for the skin of the rest of the team. Now that I've settled on my color scheme and the palette I want to use for the skin, I'm more confident to put the skin on every model at the same time and start to do kind of batch painting on them. And also I have ordered my base Kansas hobby for my team, and I opt for the pumpkin Fields of Scream from Secret Weapon Miniature.
Hey, you know what's funny is when I was working for Justin at Adepticon, we were talking about those bases, and he made them as kind of like a lark, like just for fun, thinking that some people would take them from Malifaux or something, and then they turned out to be one of his best-selling lines.
So. I am encouraging that or following that trend.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know why people buy them, but people seem to like them. So I'll keep making them. Justin's very practical that way. If someone will buy it, he'll make it.
Yeah. Money's money.
Well, that's good. Exactly. That's good. Fill the demand with a product. So, and That's it for my hobby. And as for gaming, I had a couple of games of Guild Ball. One against Engineer, and the guy was at his first full game or something like that. So
first game,
okay. And it was a bit longer than what I'm now used to, but was interesting because I didn't know. It was the first time I faced Engineer, and they're quite a different team from what I faced so far. And I think they're an interesting team, but they look like they have a steep learning curve compared to like Butchers or Brewers. And also I played against Antoine at Paul's place, and I almost won. Actually, I would have won, and I have all the right to blame the dice because I couldn't get a 4 on 3 dice, and that made me lose the game.
Yeah, you just failed your last.
You missed that goal.
Missed the goal.
Goal attempt.
Yep. And I had the game. It would have been
12-6, I think.
Yeah, 12-6 at that point. And it ended up in a 12-10 loss. But it's okay. I'm starting to learn my team a bit more. A lot more,
I would say.
And putting up resistance to Antoine. So that's a good thing. Hopefully I'll be able to win one game this coming Sunday at the Taco Bell. Or if not, it's okay. I'm going to have Taco Bell. So Taco Bell. Yeah, I'm going to have Taco Bell and play Guild Ball. So it's going to be
a win-win.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're making me sad that I'm going to be away with my family. We're leaving for vacation that morning. So I'm all annoyed. I'm going to miss the whole grand opening thing.
But you can have better Taco Bell in the States.
Oh, I won't be one of the Taco Bell in the States. No worries. No worries. But maybe I'll try to sneak in on Saturday, get some Mark III games in or something.
So that's it for gaming.
That's it for you, Steve?
Yeah. Okay.
So let's go straight into the question of the week, and then we'll take a little break after that. So this week's question is from Kelly Kim. Sorry, I'm just wondering, is that a guy or a girl? Because it could go either way.
Is it really important?
No, it's just a curiosity thing. That's a... Sorry, no, it's late. The name. Anyway, so yeah, the question is, if you could bring back any one out of production miniature game, what would it be? How about any one out of production miniature? Steve, why don't you start this?
Can we answer for him?
Well, we all have the same answer.
I think everybody knows the answer to that question. I would bring back Warhammer Fantasy.
And there was much rejoicing.
I wouldn't blame you. I think I'm going to jump on that bandwagon and say that would also be my choice. I came to that game late. At the end of 8th edition, I started playing that game. And I really liked it. And then it was gone.
Like a dream.
I can only imagine how crushed you must be, having invested in it for years and years and years and have it taken away from you. And then have your army discontinued. And then have your other army replaced.
Yeah. That's okay. I found a new game.
I mean, if only you were still playing, you could have a giant beetle with a bodybuilding elf on it with wings.
The bodybuilding is there, but the beetle is pretty nice. It's pretty nice.
I love a lot of the elements.
It's a bit too much.
The combined aesthetic bothers me. And I don't actually like the aesthetic of what they've done with the Wood Elves in general. The Sylvaneth or whatever they're called now. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a pretty boring answer because we all have the same answers.
Really? Yom, that's your choice too?
Yes.
Wow, okay. What about you, Antoine?
It's not fantasy. I would like to see it back, but that would not be it. I have two answers. The first one is a kind of a joke answer. I would bring back Chronopia. I like that game. I like the fluff of the game. I like the visual aspect of the game. The miniature didn't go... were not up on par to the artwork, for sure. And even the artwork, looking at it back now, is dated. But still, I like the game. I like the concept. It's kind of an ancestor to how War Machine works now, that if you strike first, you will get the upper hand, and it's not a waiting game. So I like that concept. But for a serious answer, I would say War Master. It's one of my favorite games.
You know what's funny? I knew you were going to say War Master. Yeah. I knew it. I knew it. It was going to be that.
Yeah, I still have my all the books that came out for it, either the fantasy version or the historical, the ancient one. I have my dwarves that I'm picking back up in the next couple of weeks that I'm just waiting to play it again, even if it's dead. So many companies are doing proxies now for it or alternates, so you can still play it and the rules still work. If you take the tweaks they did to the ancient version and applied it to the War Master base, it makes it a bit more balanced and streamlined, and it works out well. So I would like to see it back because the Game Workshop sculpts for it were really good for 10 millimeter. And
oh, it was 10? It wasn't 6 like Epic?
No, it was 10. It's a little bigger than Epic. And it gave a really cool scale for monsters, like the Hydra for the Dark Elf really looked like a monster. Especially if you go back to 6th edition where every monster was big, but not that big compared to regular people. But the Hydra in that was the size of a whole regiment of spearmen, and dragons were tall. So it makes for a better scale, I find.
Well, you know, Antoine, I'm a sucker for miniatures, right? And I really like small scale stuff. Mm-hmm. I like the look of it on the table. So if you really want to play War Master, I will invest and get a 10 millimeter fantasy army to play against you.
That or Ancient, I don't mind. But if you want to play...
I have no interest in Ancients. No. I will play War Master, though.
Oh, but that's fine. I have an army for it. So. Yeah, if you are up to it, I'm in for sure. I like the... Okay. I love the visual of the smaller scale stuff. How the terrain works and everything. Yes.
So your mission is to find me some good 10 millimeter fantasy miniatures.
Sure. Find the type of army you want, and I'll find that for you.
I'm thinking elves. Wood elves.
I've seen some. I've seen fantastic stag riders that you could use for wild riders. I still have links for those because I was looking to maybe get them as an army.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So the second part of the question, if there was any out of production miniature,
Steve won the old Nagash.
Well, actually,
everyone wants the old Nagash.
I have it already, Nagash. So.
I'm sure you want more copies of it to make a statues row or something.
I have one, and it's okay.
That's a really tough question.
Yeah, the thing is, a lot of the out of production miniatures are just so ugly by today's standards.
No, I have one. I know exactly which one I would like to get back.
Okay, so why don't you start?
The Confrontation Goblin Pirate Crew.
Oh, yeah.
Still looking for one.
I always forget about Confrontation, the aesthetic, right?
And they could bring back the Confrontation at the same time.
The same the game? You really want that with the experience we had with that game, Guillaume?
No.
I just want the model. I just want the goblin to get more goblin parts. That's all. I don't care about the rest of the game. The other goblins, the ninja goblins are cool too, but they're not pirates. So, any of you guys have a real answer for that?
No real answer because. Like, sometimes, like, the old models, I prefer the old models than what is currently being sold, but I already own those models, so I don't wish for any of those miniatures to come back. Like, it's not like I miss my chance to grab one. And like, for example, I prefer the old orc killer cans, the metal ones, rather than the new plastic ones. But I already have, like, 12, so... Yeah. I don't want it to come back, especially. But
yeah, I'm really stumped. I'm trying to think of something. I got nothing.
You could say the old wood elves compared to the Age of Sigmar ones now.
Yeah, but I have them all.
Yeah, I know. Like a young.
I've got stacks of wood elves. Yeah, I can't think of anything. Steve.
No, I'm trying to find, but I don't have anything that comes to mind.
I'll go back to the first part of the question, that Paul, you were surprised that I would pick Warhammer Fantasy. But Warhammer Fantasy, it filled a niche that no other games I have filled. So that's why it would be my choice.
Army. Yeah, that big look. Same for me. It was just the look, like the. I suck at playing games. What I'm really big at is I like the look of them on the table, right? It's that whole visual appeal, and nothing has the same visual that Warhammer Fantasy had.
Yeah, well, just the game, the style. Well,
I guess Kings of War does, but
it's not the same. The thing we should do is Steve gave it a try, but we should try a 9th Age. Especially now that it's more official and companies are supporting it. They're not going away.
Ninth Age is Warhammer Fantasy, right?
Oh, yes, for sure. So that's why we should try the change they made and see what we think of it.
Now, what I'm curious is what they're going to do with the Sylvaneth. Are they going to make a whole other army, or are they just going to replace the Wood Elves with it? Are they going to put it all together?
I'm not sure they're going to integrate all the new change. Like, they haven't done anything for the Stormcast, have they?
No.
I think... Oh, because I asked you guys if they had, and you guys said yes, so...
They mentioned that they wanted to work new release in the game, but I'm not sure they're going to do it for everything. Okay. And not yet.
But, Yom, I'm surprised you say Warhammer as a... out of print game. I thought you would choose Dust.
Dust isn't dead.
Dust isn't dead. It's dead in Montreal. And I would like it to come back in Montreal, but it's not out of production. Apparently, it's not out of production. We have no proof, but apparently.
How's that Kickstarter coming, Yom?
It's in the ocean. It's somewhere.
It's right there with my Games and Gears battle board, right from 4 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
They're on the same boat.
With all my hopes and dreams, it would sink to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. It's crossing the ocean in reverse.
It's making me so mad, but... And I see them, like, promoting the game and new releases, and, like, I still don't have my pledge. God damn it.
I like how they're selling those models now on their website.
Yeah.
It's like twisting the knife. And it's not... You know what? It's not the studio's fault. Or entirely their fault. I don't know. I don't remember what the story is at this point. I don't really care.
I don't care anymore either.
But that whole mess just... I'm sure both sides are to blame. Because it's very seldom always one side that causes the problem. But yeah, that just sucks for everyone.
It's a good question, Steve, because when it can finally arrive, because I'm a romantic and I believe in things like that, I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I don't know. Is the flame still burning low for every player? I really don't know.
Well, I've got a bunch of stuff still in the box that I never actually unpacked to play. So I would still play. I really liked Battlefield. I thought it was a simple rule set that was elegant. It worked. I didn't mind the aesthetic of the game. I liked the fact that it was scenario-driven. I didn't have to worry about trying to table my opponent to play. I would totally play again. I'm sure 80% G would play again as well. There's a community there, right? People have the models. It's not like we can sell them off. No one's going to buy them.
No, exactly.
So, you know, I could sell them off, sure, for $10 for a whole army, but... Actually, no, I can never sell off my army. Most of it was given to me, so...
Oh, that could be another way to answer that question too. If you want Art of Production miniature game to come back, just to in order to be able to sell what we have, like Anima Tactics, come back so I can sell you.
But at least those are gorgeous models, just for the joy of painting.
Yeah, they are beautiful.
And the game
uselessly
is fun.
Beautiful.
You know, I got 6 boxes of Tomb King skeletons. What the hell am I gonna do with those?
No, I'm actively thinking of in Anima Tactics of like the models I have. Can I use them as proxies for like in Warmer Hordes or something? Like, I'm sure there's something I can do. But yeah, stuck with old stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're super rambling at this point.
Yep.
So I think we've answered it to the best of our ability.
I think so too.
Okay. Great. So why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our main topic. So we'll be right back, geeks. And we're back. All right, folks. So now I'm here with the guys, and we're going to talk about how to brainwash your kids. I mean, how to get your kids interested in gaming. I think it's every male gamer's dream to have kids that to play games with them.
Yeah, and also guys and girls out there, you don't have to have boys to interest them into gaming. So.
No, that's good news for me, because
yeah, exactly.
I'll have a daughter.
Any offspring will do.
Exactly. So stop the stereotype and live the new generation.
Yeah, with the proper sacrifices and dark rituals, any child can be converted.
Well, just give them candy.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. Okay. On track now.
Oh, right, wow. Now, I'm just wondering if Steve is hiring his friend gamers with a white van.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I know. Eh?
Wow.
Like, pulls up next to him, throws him in the back.
Okay.
Seems to be...
Let's edit that part out. Thanks.
This is a family friendly show, Steve.
Yeah.
We don't want your kind on here.
Okay. So start again, and we'll come back.
Oh, I'll just run with it.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, my daughter's two, so I don't have a lot of input on this, but I'm very curious what you guys, because you've all got older kids.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily older, but older than mine anyway.
Well, mine are 6 and 8. Yeah. Wow. That's good.
Mine is, my oldest is 6 going on 7.
Okay.
And in my case, my older just got 6.
Okay. So you're kind of at the cusp of when you can start getting them into gaming.
Yeah.
Steve with his eldest is a little bit more advanced maybe. But the two of you, you know, Antoine and Yom, you're just, I guess, kind of at that point where they can start to kind of want to participate in the things that interest you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right. Okay, so
yeah.
So why don't we start maybe with some of the benefits of getting your kids into gaming. And I don't necessarily mean benefits to us, because, you know, we that's an obvious benefit.
Yeah, we have a play partner. Yay!
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the old point, right? Because my spouse won't play with me, so if at least I can get my gaming through my kids.
Yes,
well, if you'd actually show up, you all might play against you.
But, yeah, that's what I was going to say, Paul. Actually, if your daughter played at War Machine, you could have played 2 games of MK3 already instead of those 2 easy wins against Yom.
Okay. So the first time, just for the record, you told me not to show up. You told me not to show up.
Sure. And for the record, when I contacted you, you were an hour and a half late and still a half hour away from where I live. So, for the record, it's still your fault.
I was still up for it.
And for the record, you can just rewind, 15, 20 minutes and you'll have everything that in the first hobby section.
All right. So, no, seriously, let's talk about some of the benefits to the kids. You know, why gaming is a good thing.
First point, I think, is it's good for any like logical thinking or even their classes. You have to do maths, you have to do reading, you have to do problem solving while you're playing game, and in various degrees, for sure, depending on the game. But that's all skills that will be useful for them if they haven't started school or are already in school. They might get they might not like reading, but you get them into D&D, and after that they want to read a fantasy novel maybe that they haven't tried before, or they're not good at math, but you for subtle math by having them add dice and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, you, especially like for learning, numbers and like, if you play a game that has target number, it will be easier for them. Like if they have a basic maths, background, but reading is depending on the game, because you can start with games that they don't really need to read. If you want to start them like, at 5 or 6, like when they're in the preschool or something like that, they could start with a couple of games that when they start to recognize a number, they can start to play. But they don't need to know how to read for every game. But I understand like more advanced game, you'll need to wait until they know how to read for sure.
That's how I started with Theodore. I started with different games that had only numbers that you needed to recognize, or that even before that I was explaining to him what he had to roll. He didn't even add the number knowledge by that time. But it
interesting.
Got and him interested into it. Like we got him interested in number by playing dice with pips, and he had to count the pips to know if he got the target he needed. So he started getting number recognition from games.
That's an interesting point, because I mean, when I got into gaming, I was older than any of your kids. I was probably 9 or 10 when I first started playing D&D. And I remember when I was I guess I was 11 at the time. They used to make us take these tests called the Canadian Test of Basic Skills, and every kid had to take it. And then it would grade you against the national average, and that you'd get like a report card from it. And I remember in the reading section, I was reading at a collegiate level. Just from reading D&D books, my reading had gone from a regular elementary kid level to like collegiate level.
Nice.
In like the span of a year and a half. And it also helped all my basic math skills, because you can't calculate THACO if you don't know math.
Exactly.
Right? So old school second edition D&D made me the man I am today.
Well, the first time my daughters were faced with dice is because I tend to order dice. Like when I was playing Warhammer, I had a set of dice for every army, and I was testing out the dice to see if they were rolling good or not. So the girls wanted to play with the dice, and they started counting with the dice. Like, how many dice do you have that are more than four? How many have more than five? And stuff like that. So they were playing with the dice, and I was checking if they were good or not.
I ordered big foam dice. They're probably two or three inches large each, and I bought, I think, five or six to play with Theodore. So he was always rolling them in the living room, counting pips, adding dice together. So you know, even what? His additions, he started doing additions at four, I think, something like that.
You know what? Foam dice, eh? We should get a set of those for Yom. They'll hurt less when he throws them at us.
Yeah, the thing that I still don't remember doing. Yeah.
You've never thrown dice at me, but it's good fun to tease you about it anyway.
No, he never throw the dice. He thrown at a model.
No, really, anyway. It doesn't ring any bell. But
poor Yom, we always paint him as such a monster. But he's actually such a nice guy. another good thing about gaming.
Yeah, speaking of throwing stuff.
What?
I don't know if you were going to the next point in the show note. That's okay. Why. I thought you were doing a segue.
I thought you dropped.
I'll get to that in a second. Sorry.
Oh, that was a perfect segue.
No. I was actually going to say, I don't always attack you. I don't always, jeez. What I was going to say, though, is that one of the other things that the gaming books help with is learning another language.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because a lot of my friends that I played D&D with when I was young were Francophone. And of course, I had the books in English. So it actually improved their language skills by reading these books. It increased their vocabulary. It helped them communicate better in English. So that can also be a good way to encourage people, pick up some of the other language.
Well, I'm sure you did it on purpose because you didn't want to pick up the French book.
You know,
I'm just kidding.
I don't actually ever remember seeing the French books.
Oh, there were French book, but they came out like so late after the English one. Like,
I didn't live in the city several months.
Oh, right, yeah.
I lived out in the country. The place I got my D&D books was actually a toy store in the Granby shopping mall. And they had a little tiny rack, like one book wide and like four levels or five levels. And that was my D&D books. That was all the selection I had. And they had a little glass case with Citadel and Ralpartha miniatures in it. And that was it. So.
No, we used to travel to Montreal to the Valetcar to get the English book because it was taking too long to get the French version in Trois-Rivières. So we learned English as well, through gaming. Yeah.
And it seemed to have paid off. You guys all speak English very well.
Lucky in quotes. I was lucky that the toy store we had in town in Victoriaville had a big selection of RPGs and a lot of them in French. So all my old D&D stuff, my Shadowrun books, all my old stuff is all in French.
So my big question is, how do you say taco in French since there's no TH sound?
There's no H, but it's T-A-C-O. It's still taco. It's just not
it's
the...
It's taco, but it's not the delicious taco.
It's not the same acronym, but it's for any French speaker, it's Touché Armure Classe Zero. So it's still T-A-C-O. It still works.
To hit Armor Class Zero, same thing.
But no H.
Well, even if it was there, it would be silent anyway.
Yes.
All right, so let's move on to our next point.
Yep.
So,
the next
going back to the point about throwing dice and stuff.
Yeah, it fits with the second point.
Yeah. So, gaming can help build social etiquette and social skills. And this is a very good point.
Yes, it helps build your kid to learn to wait for their turn. Not be a sore loser or a sore winner. My little boy is full of energy and doesn't like to wait. So having not just miniatures game, but board games, same thing. It's make him work on those waiting skills. And the sore loser part too.
My daughter has got the first part. Like down the waiting for her turn, but my son is 3 going on 4. He still has problem with that. But it helps a lot because I've seen a big difference. I've been gaming with her for maybe like a year steady, and I've seen a big difference between now and a year ago about taking a loss. She reacts well now. She doesn't mind. She just wants to play another game. Or like I play another match, or like she's trying to get her a rematch to get her revenge instead of taking it the bad way. It really helps.
Yeah, it's a good point because unless your child's enrolled in like some sort of team sport or something, there's no real way to teach them good sportsmanship. You know, and it's a skill that's acquired over time. You don't instantly develop that, after one showing.
No, exactly, and
sure. So
I mean, she stays at school after when the school's done, and she just plays game with the other kids that cannot go home too early. So it's good. See, it's gonna help her develop those, like, friendships with others. Let's say, because since she won't be a sole loser, it won't be a bad experience for anyone who plays with her. So. She always find like people to play with her easily, because she's fun to play with, no matter what was the result. I don't know about the other kids. I hope that the other parents are doing the same. But like doing the same at home, you really see the evolution. So bottom line is gonna help them all their life. They won't throw dice or models, apparently, at people.
See, Yom, it's what makes you a good parent. You're trying to teach your kid to be better than you.
Yeah.
All right. And the next point in the doc actually is also a very good one. And this is something I've noticed already as an issue, and that's time away from the screen.
Yeah.
You know,
especially now compared to when we were kids, there's not as many screens.
Yeah, technology is everywhere now.
Yeah.
My daughter is 2, knows how to operate my phone.
Mm-hmm.
She will load up the picture app and start going through videos and stuff on my phone, and she knows how to flip pages and play videos and...
Change your password.
Well, she can't unlock the phone.
Oh, okay.
She'll just scream at me until I give it to her.
Okay.
She has the best password. Yeah.
To be honest, that would be a good point for most of our wives, I think.
Yeah.
But, comment. Okay.
But a time away from the screen, and it's also something like when you have a rainy day or a really cold day in the winter, if you live up north, it gives you something to do apart from watching a movie on TV or like spending time in front of the TV. You have a game that you can play when they're getting ready for playing games.
Yeah, and it's social time. It's family time. You don't play miniature games alone. You play with other people.
develop so. Straight
and everything we've set up to now works for other kind of gaming too. Just as we go along, there will be point that only affects miniature gaming.
Yeah, but this is the basics apply to so any kind of board game or social game. It helps strengthen those family ties. Yeah, because my daughter, as smart as she is, if I just turn on the TV, she will never stop watching TV. She just like stands there and watching and. I hate it. It doesn't help her in any kind of way. Like it shows that she knows, like that she has already watched, and she just cannot stop herself from watching. So I have to pry her away from the screen. But it helps because she has so much fun when we play. But like my son will just let go of the screen by himself and do something else. So I expect it would be maybe easier for him, but. At some point, you have to
mind me an age thing.
Yeah, you have to be the party pooper. You have to turn off the screen, take away the tablet, take away the game, and do something else with it. But I mean, a TV show won't bring you as much laughter between father and kids than playing actual games.
All right, next point. Or next benefit, I should say. Increased creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're playing with younger kids, the most rules set will be too complicated. So you'll have to be doing tweakings and doing house rules or even creating your own. So you will be working on your own creativity, but you can do most of those things with your kid. And they will have ideas, and they will also bring a lot more storytelling than we tend to do in our own games.
And what you can do is, since they're kid, you can do a bit of sound effect as well. Well, I know Yom still does it sometimes, even though he's an adult. But for the kid, but the kids the kids like it because like. They immerse more in the game and the world, so it will help them build the environment and the story around the game, I think.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
Like, for example, I have a Super Dungeon Explorer game. I've never played with her, but I give her access to the models. So she takes the models and she plays out our little scenario. Just like they were regular toys. So.
My son does that too. He has I have a bunch of Space Marines reserved for him and a bunch of chibi miniatures. And you have them fighting or playing together and stuff like that.
And let's not forget the obvious creative outlet with the miniatures, right? The painting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, they probably won't be doing anything Yom's level in those formative years, but they may be able to obtain my level or Steve's level if they try hard enough.
Yeah.
So,
give them a year or two.
Fun for them. Yeah, exactly. You know, by the time they're four, they should be able to paint like me and Steve. But it's just a creative outlet for them, right? They like there's lots of colors, they can do stuff. Models are fairly easy to strip if you put them in the right solution. So.
And you can get
a lot of models.
You can get cheap models too. Like I bought
Bones
Euroclix, like extras for 25 cents.
Yeah, and extras, just Bones are like a dollar each or something, right?
Yep. So
lots of options out there for that, and it's something again that can also be a group activity. With you and your kid, you do some painting time together.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good family time.
Be patient, though.
Yeah. I tried that once because my daughter wanted, like, they can see my models, obviously, when I paint. So she wanted to paint, too. So I did the whole setup and showed her how it was done. But she was really, like, disappointed in the results. So I tried really hard. To be caring and explain to her that it took time for daddy to get that good. So it would take time for her too, but no, she was so disappointed that her models didn't look like mine. Yeah. I guess it's part of the second point that the social etiquette thing a bit, like taking a loss. I don't know. It's like saying that even when you apply yourself, you don't always succeed, but it's okay. What you have to do is keep going.
And that's actually a good lesson to learn too at a young age. You know, because you know every parent likes to think their child's a special snowflake, and
but they are, Paul.
Unintentionally, we can give our kids unreasonable expectations about success. You know, and everyone in life has failures. There's no, you know, there's no way around it. So you can't always be good at everything. So that's a good lesson to learn.
Yeah.
And you know, this kind of we were talking about before, and it kind of we were kind of going into our next point, which is father and son time or father and daughter time away from mom to give mom a break,
and
it's kind of a bonding experience between.
We say father because we're all guys, but I know some people who
For sure.
The mother is the gamer and the father isn't, and it's the same thing. So.
No, for sure. It can be something special that, you know, a parent can do with their child. Right? Something they do together.
Yeah, it's a special one-on-one time that they have with you. And kids like love
bonding.
That.
Bonding. Yeah, special bonding.
Yeah. And then I'm assuming this next point was put in by Steve. That one of the benefits of playing against your child is that
I think the next thing is game quality to look. I think that's what it says on the doc.
I'm looking at something about boost your ego since you're most likely to win, crush your spirit. One day they will understand and beat you. And I'm guessing that was totally Steve that slid that in there when no one was looking.
Your own kids. Jeez, your own kids.
Well, they need to learn hard work.
Exactly.
This is it. School of Hard Knocks or whatever.
Yeah.
See, first Steve gets them addicted to Warhammer Fantasy, and then he lets them know it's discontinued. And,
I did
double whammy. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some of the qualities to look for in a game to play with our children.
That depends a lot on the age you're looking for. So, for younger kids, you're gonna go first for simple rules, or rules simple enough that you can adjust them to the level of your kids. Like the first minis game, the real miniature game I tried with Theodore was HeroQuest, because it's all visual symbols and just numbers. Like, there are some abilities on the card, but I just explained them to him or just skipped them. So he had to look for symbol on the dice versus symbol, like the smalls.
Yeah, so it becomes like a match game.
Yeah, he was matching skulls versus shields or stuff like that. I don't remember exactly what the three symbols on it, but something like that. So he was counting, okay, do I have more swords? More. Let's go for swords. Swords, then you have shields. Yes, then I hit you.
Well, you can tell this game was an old version of the game because, you know, if it was made today, it would be like the dice would have like flowers and clouds on them and stuff. And you match up those symbols.
Like the Super Dungeons one.
Yeah.
A game from back in our day where people died. Yeah, and it's true, right? So it's going to depend a lot on the kid and the age of the child. And, you know, another big thing is the game has to have a look that'll catch them.
And not just
the game can be super cool, but if it's not visually appealing,
yeah, don't you're bring never going to get them to play Kingdom it. Monsters for your kid.
Well, those can be visually appealing but weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think so.
Probably but some like of the monsters like, I think you should you keep away.
Nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But like the I was thinking, you know, games that use plain tokens or something that's not the game could be fun, but there's not a lot to grab them initially.
Yeah, don't bring a Euro game with the wooden cubes.
Yeah, exactly. Agricola Family Edition is not maybe the best starter game. Yeah.
Although she likes Carcassonne. Little.
Yeah, but there's meeples. They're not cubes, at yeah. least.
yeah.
Or if you got cubes, at least glue googly eyes on them. Yeah, make them interesting.
Yeah. Hey, think about it. You have that, or what's the chibi game fully painted?
Oh, Crowmaster.
Yeah, Crowmaster. Which one is more appealing for a kid?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Even for an adult, I would say.
I was just thinking you make a version of Crossmasters that you use that rule set, but use it with the little people? You could totally do that.
For sure.
And also, well, it's kind of with visually appealing, you need to find a team that they're going to like. Like if you, your little son likes dragons and knight, well, it's maybe like go for Super Dungeon Explorers or... Well, if I take mine, for example, they love Star Wars, so that's why I started X-Wing with them, because mm-hmm. they like Star Wars. I didn't impose, like, Super Dungeon Explorer, even though the Chibi Mini will probably be adorable for them, or and they will like the Mini, but they're not that much into Knights and Dragons and Goblins and stuff like that, and they're more into Star Wars, so... I chose Star Wars.
You gotta X-Wing. Go with their interest. Go with the flow.
Exactly. It's gonna be easier, and they're gonna show more interest into the game, and they will want to learn it if it's something that they have already an interest in, rather than shove it down their throat.
No, it's a very, very good point. And
because it's not because you like the game that they're gonna like it.
And you know, that's kind of, you mentioned that, and it makes me think of our friend Dan, the guy, the owner of Gamers Vault, because he has two boys, and they play games together. And Dan loves all kinds of different games. And it's funny, he tries everything with them, right? Because, you know, just the, it's like the shotgun effect. The more he throws at them, you know, the more it sticks. So, you know, it totally can work. You totally can get your kids into gaming.
Well, I will be doing the same thing with Theodore. I have so many rule sets and games that I haven't been able to try with other gamers locally. At least him, I can, until he moves out, he doesn't have a choice. You want your allowance for the week? Try Nemesis now.
But you know, it's just—it always makes me laugh every time. And Dan is this crazy library of games. And Dan will bring board games to everywhere. You go to a restaurant, board game comes out. It's like, what are you doing? We can play this while we're waiting for our food. Like, no, we can't. There's no place for a board. We'll just clear the table. We'll make space. You know, always makes me laugh. And his kids like gaming, but they're not as addicted as he is. Because he is crazy addicted to gaming. Did I cut out again? Or?
Yeah, no.
Didn't have anything to add. That's why.
It's just all so quiet. Okay. Oh.
Another thing to look for is also depending on your age or family values. Up here in the north, we are a bit less Christian or less not faithful.
Religious?
Less religious, yeah. But other listeners might be, and the theme of the game, you need, it goes with the also the visual style. But some theme might be too violent for you or too gory. Like if I go for two games that are really similar and play with true scale models, if you play House Raiders, it will pass easily with your kids. It's nonviolent, these little fairies. But if you go for fairy meat, even your significant other might be against that idea. For people who don't know, fairy meat is carnivorous fairies ripping each other's arms and legs and using them as weapon and eating during the game.
Yeah.
Well, sounds like fun to me.
Yeah.
A bit too much.
So you play in your living room with at true scale, and House Raiders is the same, but you have like little rodents... stealing buttons and stuff like that. It's a lot less violent.
Right. I mean, when you say you play True Scale, you mean you use household items as terrain and stuff, right?
Yeah,
like
and
the coasters on the table or the book that's on the table or
exactly,
whatever.
Exactly, and the miniatures they're supposed to be 1-to-1 scale. So the miniature is 2.5 inch, but that creature is supposed to be 2.5 inch. And as it moves on your table, it moves around your kobold and stuff like that.
Yeah. And again, we have a dramatic pause.
Well, I was just imagining fairy meat. If it's true scale, you use real fairy that you chop off the limbs, but no, right? That's not correct.
No, Steve, maybe you have fairies that you trap in your basement. The rest of us don't.
I need to slow down on the absinthe, I think.
Yeah, it's just a little bit. Too much liquid English, Steve.
Or share, so we can all play.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we already talked about this in the notes. We talked about we've listed other sides of the hobby. So painting, we've already talked about. And as you said, it can be a double-edged sword, right? Because the kid is happy to participate in your hobby, but then they can be disappointed that they don't get the same results.
Yeah.
Or that maybe they get frustrated because of the amount of time it takes.
Yeah, that's something right. That she was surprised to. Like, it looks easy, but it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Assembling models. Now, that can be tricky because crazy glue and kids don't usually mix. But if you're doing plastic models where the glue doesn't really bond to skin.
Mm-hmm.
Or exacto.
Yeah, and don't do that with your 5-year-old, but older, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
No, well, there's lots of...
would be good, but no crazy glue, no super glue.
Well, yeah. Even Testar, it's toxic. And the non-toxic, it doesn't dries fast enough, and you have to hold the model for like a crazy amount of time.
That's good. It's working in their waiting time.
Yeah, but use a toxic one and 5 minutes and you're done. Screw the fumes and be done with it.
You lend them your airbrush mask and they'll just be happy to look like a weird monster thing while assembling your models.
Mad scientist looking.
And then they can take a selfie and update it for their Facebook. have you like realized that there's so many painters, their picture includes a mask, airbrushing mask?
Yeah.
My God, what's the trend? I don't know. I miss that one.
Well, that was a segue that I didn't see. Okay. and building terrain. Now, terrain building can be really fun.
Hey, it's like craft for them.
Or no, I was thinking like you could do it with blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you did something like
table like with wood blocks and stuff like that. Yeah, for sure.
Right, do wood blocks or even like Duplos, Legos, whatever. You know, it's changeable terrain.
Mm-hmm. And wasn't there? I mentioned that later, but you can just play Brick Wars.
As I was about to say, wasn't there a game where you played with Lego, like miniatures made out of Lego?
Absolutely. And I have a link later in the doc to the current rule set. Yeah. And you could build anything you want with that. Any team, anything. And half of the fun is creating your models and your board before playing.
Yeah. And again, it becomes a whole like afternoon activity thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So actually, it's funny you mentioned that there's some of that information in the doc later on, because we're actually at that point now where we're talking about examples of games. These are all games that you guys put in here that you thought or that you had experienced with that they were interesting for the kids. So let's go through this. So first on the list, we've got. So, Antoine, I don't know if it was you that wrote this in the doc, but the original ones.
Yeah, it's so, old games that either I played or heard of when I was a kid. So, one is Weapon and Warriors, Castle Combat Set, and I think here it was called Siege. You were playing with models, and you had catapults, trebuchets, and stuff like that, and you were throwing marbles. It's like an introduction to miniature gaming. You don't have dice or stuff like that, but each...
And you had to knock down the other guy's castle walls.
Or yeah, right? Exactly.
It's funny. So someone actually, and I know the game you're talking about. And someone I know at work was actually looking for a copy of that game on eBay.
That's like a year ago. Costing a lot.
It was. They found it. It was a fortune. It was like a couple $100 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's an old game. That's a game from like the 80s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It may have got remade at one point.
You can also play one-on-one Angry Birds. You know, you can buy a set for like $15, $20.
It's a similar.
You build a castle and you each add like a catapult and you draw the other guy. Yeah, that's the same concept.
It sounds about the same, yeah. That could be cool.
And all kids like Angry Birds.
Yeah, for some reason.
Yeah,
so what else we got in the list?
Apart from that, there's two others, and like one could be the basic set and the other is the advanced set, is Hero Quest and Warhammer Quest. So that's two games I did play. Young, I think Hero Quest, I was probably 8 or 9 when I first played that. And Warhammer Quest came later. But they were my introduction to miniature and gaming. I used some miniature in RPGs, but no miniature board gaming or war gaming before that.
And
so Hero Quest was my first.
Me too.
Around that time, there was also Battle Master.
I never tried that one.
Oh, really? No. Okay. That was my gateway to Warhammer Fantasy.
Yeah. How actually, did that one work?
Well, you had a big board with tiles, hexagonal tiles, and was Chaos Warriors against Empire. I think there was some Goblin as well. And you just fought against each other, so... And was movement was based on the number of X you could move, and there was a cannon and stuff like that. And the knights were almost the same as they were in Warhammer Fantasy when the game ended.
Yeah.
The knights, it was the same model, actually, pretty much.
My first game was HeroQuest. I can't remember exactly how old I was. I think maybe 10. And when we talked earlier about like how it helped creativity and the building terrain or whatever, I liked the game a lot, but it belonged to a friend at first. I bought my own copy later on, but it belonged to a friend. So at home, I built a board game to replace HeroQuest because I was so like in the hype of HeroQuest. So like I took a old like a big cardboard, which I drew like a map on it, like an island or something, and then I traced the grid. I cut out like some holes to make like endless pits, and that's like I cut out the holes, and then I took like a old yogurt pot, plastic pot, that I painted black inside to insert them, so I had like real pits on my board. So and then I went on the computer and like drew like, oh my god, that was so ugly, like different characters, and I printed them and the cutouts. I made actual cutouts of little characters. It was so ugly, but I was so proud. And I played with my dad at the time. Yeah, it really like gets you into that creativity mood. Yeah, get the balls rolling.
You mentioned playing with your dad. I think HeroQuest is the only miniature game I ever played with my parents.
And they played one like or two, you, they did,
and that's it.
Yeah, like yours, they did that just like to make you happy and shut up.
Oh, for sure.
That's a parent's job, right?
Exactly.
And for us, we're trying to make it our kids' job. You know? Our parents had to do it for us. Now our kids are going to have to do it for us. Yeah. All right, so what are some of the other board games with minis? We got a few on the list here.
Yeah, those are more recent. Yeah,
We mentioned Super Dungeon Explorer a bunch of times in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But you get some others on here.
Yeah, another one that's easy for to get your kids into is Mice and Mystics or the Telfeathers. Mice and Mystics, I would go to it first because it's like a story game, and you are playing little adventurers that have been transformed into mice. And they must get out of the castle because the evil queen transformed them or something like that. And every chapter has a big story, and you play through that story, and you have little mice fighting your rats and insects and stuff like that. And it's super cute. Their stories are really good. And that's one you hear often if you listen to other board gaming podcasts or miniature podcasts. They mention that one a lot for people who play with their kids. And Tailfeather is another game, but that one is a one-on-one fighting games where you are playing the same mice in the same universe, but they are jousting on birds and fighting in the treetops. And that one is really a combat game. So maybe for later, but Mice and Mystics is cooperative. The other is a versus game. So for younger kids, that's something we haven't mentioned before, but if your kids have difficulty or are soldiers or stuff like that, or have difficulty understanding, you can go for a game that's cooperative. There are some miniature games that do that, like Mice and Mystics. So you play with your kids and you just help them along, and you are fighting against the board game. Outside of those two, there's also the, how they call that system? I'm drawing a blank, but X-Wing Miniature, D&D Attack Wing, and
Flight Path.
The Flight Path system, yeah. Or Wings of Glory, even if you want to go to an historical setting. All those are pretty easy to play with your kid, especially if you don't go heavy into the upgrade cards and stuff like that.
Just the basic rules, if you take the upgrade cards out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it becomes super simple.
Yep. I've played the D&D Attack Wing with my son a bunch. He really likes it. Sure, playing just one versus one with the dragons kind of get boring quickly for the parent, but he loves it. So,
yeah, for my part, I've played with the X-Wing starter set, and for now it's enough. They didn't show real interest into gaming, so I didn't buy any more ships or anything, but it's good because I've played actually the youngest played more, and it helps her because at the beginning she had a hard time like figuring out how to turn the dial to, like, she wanted the ship to go right, but she put the ship left, so at first I let it go, but just to teach her, like,
special recognition. It's a
yeah, really exactly. So I said, well, if your ship go outside the mat, your ship is dead. So be careful. And just by making that, instead of letting her chances like how to move, and she took like 1 minute more or even less, but she really took the focus to look and make sure that she's going right or left correctly. So that's good for that, because they visualize the space and they understand. And after a couple of games, I added more rules, because at first I really started really basic with no asteroids or even the range. Now I added the range, and I'm gonna try to add a bit more rules from time to time, so yeah, it's not a big learning step.
Yeah, build it up gradually. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I think another easy game would be Age of Sigmar, but that's another topic.
No, I think it's a valid point. I think if you keep it basic, AOS, I don't think is that hard, as long as they can understand basic numbers. Well, at least if they can't count, that's going to make it tough.
The basic game is simple enough, but
yeah,
there are starter box for even for what all we have said on that game, there are subtleties that
are too much for a model special rules, right?
Yeah, exactly. They need to be able to read to play AOS, even though it's only 4 pages rules.
If you took out the special rules for the models and just use like basic troops or whatever, it becomes a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think you get away with it at a relatively young age, as long as they can understand numbers and count.
Yeah. Maybe not 6, but maybe 7.
I was thinking 4 or 5, but that's okay.
Have respect for the game.
I'm kidding.
And then Antoine, actually, you mentioned on the list Talisman.
I don't and remember no, putting that there. I
must be honest. It's me who did it.
It was Steve. Okay. Steve, yes, Talisman still exists. Fantasy Flight Games produces it.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
And there's a 40K version called Relic.
Okay. Because this is good for mats and skills as well, because as you gain equipment and you have to adjust the number on your card, so but it's a bit
there's
more
some
advanced.
Basic addition, yep.
Yeah, but you need to be able to read because you when you draw the cards to understand them and stuff like that, but it's I think it's basic game that could be for good for the kids.
Maybe that one is stretching the miniature side. They're really just bounds. But yeah,
oh, there's no
I can see why. You have miniatures, but you don't have really. It's not like it's not a dungeon crawl or
no.
You're not playing over a map or anything. It's a roll and move game, so
yeah,
yeah.
You can't ask too much.
Okay. And okay, so these ones I'm sure Antoine because he mentioned before.
Yeah.
So there's some real skill games. So you got the Home Raiders and the Fairy Meat you talked about before.
Yeah, I mentioned those two, and I've already gone over what they are really. So I don't think we need to add much over it.
And then, Lego based games.
Yes, there are a bunch of those. Here. So first one is Eroica. That's a setting, a set of games that are made by Lego, the Lego company.
Okay.
Small adventure games playing with the Legos. They even sell box sets for those. I haven't tried
them.
I know people who have, but they are. I don't know. I don't even know if they are still available.
Okay.
But I'm sure you could find a rule somewhere, and you just need to find a list of breaks you need and list of minifigs. So
is it a booster for Emmett? I want to play Emmett.
Probably.
Everything is awesome.
After that, you have Brick Wars, which we already have mentioned. Brick Wars is an open rule set. You can play anything. I've played that. Here now, it's more than 15 years ago, so. I'm sure the rules have changed a lot since then, but you add a number of pips to construct your vehicles, your number of models and equipment. Like a bow was costing X points or X pips versus a lance versus a war horse if you were playing the fantasy sides, the castle side. But you could build pirate ships, you could build spaceships. You can go to any team you want.
Giant space robot.
Yeah. That's available on the web. We'll have a link in the show notes for that if you're interested. And the last one I would like to mention regarding Legos is Mobile Frame Zero Rapid Attack. That went to, if I remember correctly, Kickstarter some years ago.
Yeah.
It's,
it was Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's a mech combat game. So you are building robots and fighting with them.
Oh, that's see, cool. I didn't know.
Yep.
And
it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
They actually sell you, you can buy the kits from them.
Mm-hmm. You can construct whatever you want, but they also provide a bunch of sets already made that looks pretty cool. So it's worth at least looking at them.
Yeah, it's very, and there's a lot of influence from Battletech and Gundam in the robots.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's anime inspired.
You could totally tell.
So they sell you the instruction and the list of bricks you need to build the models, or
they'll sell you
and fight
brick
with
sets.
Them, or okay.
Yeah, there's a rule set and brick sets. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. All right.
And that's it. Any other game could be adjusted to be able to play with your child, depending on the age they are. So War Machine Hordes, I wouldn't play that with Theodore at 6. But when he's 9 or 10, maybe, I think, depending on his interest, that's something you could bring up. Like you mentioned earlier, I don't know if it was during the recording or when we were chatting before, but Russ of the Decision Generation is playing with his daughter. She's 14 right now, but she started at 10 or 11, something like that. And also, I remember going to TempleCon when we first went. One of the press gangers was bringing his two young sons, and they were playing in the tournaments with us, and they were not a lot older than 10, if they were.
Yeah, I remember those kids.
That's pretty cool.
And they were winning some of the games.
I wish. I wish I would be able to play with my daughter when she's 10. Cool.
Well, I think John has started to introduce his son to Kings of War, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
How old is he?
10 or 11, I don't know.
It's like the gold, sure. The golden age.
Yeah,
to bring them.
So I think
for the gateway.
I'll be 50 by the time Muriel's 10, though. Jeez,
I have two more years. Scary thought.
Yeah. All right,
like you would stop playing at 50.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, if I'm still breathing, I'll probably still be playing. So, the I know we've gotten the notes, we've got some personal experience, but Antoine, I think you've already talked about everything.
Yeah, I think
here,
I've went over them.
I think we all kind of went over that.
Antoine in the post prod for a quick add-on. I forgot to mention one game that I think is really great to introduce your kid to gaming. It's Relic Blade by Metal King Studios. It was on Kickstarter previously this year, and it just got released last week as full retail. So take a look at it. It's a quick, simple system. You have your dice are your action points, and you use your dice. The cards have dice with a number of pips on them, and those are your target numbers. So it's super easy to understand your actions. And also, it's a great visual style with cartoony artwork on all the cards, all the equipment cards, so you don't have to remember everything. It's all card-driven for the rules. So I think it's a great one to introduce your kid. The number of miniatures are pretty limited and entries in the cards. However, it's easy to make some custom ones that you can use. And the rules are fun and quick. So I strongly suggest that you take a look at Relic Blade by Metal King Studio. And now, back to the show.
So we actually had some... We had one listener contact us telling us kind of his story. Do you want to go over this, Antoine?
Yeah, it's in French, so I'll be I won't be reading verbatim, but I'll just quickly go over it. So it's from Benoit Escarbeau, a local player from around Montreal. He's another a polygamer, like I like to say, so playing a bunch of different games. And he's only at the introduction start. His son doesn't read yet. He doesn't even understand the 4+, or he understand maybe rolling a 4+ or 5+, but it's more like a structured role playing for him. However,
he talks about how his son has like fond memories of playing games and the story that was told during the game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So his example, I think he has a Space Marine Terminator fighting off a horde of Tyranids, and the Terminator's trying to get, trying to retrieve, how do you put it?
Books about
tanks. An old book of tanks, yeah. So I guess STC, right? So he's trying to get the tank plans.
Yeah.
And he's being, like, chased by Tyranids.
And the stress was too much for the kids, and when the dice rolls was there, he had to go to the next room and cool down before doing the roll because he was too much into the game. So,
and that just sounds awesome, right? Then the kid gets so into it, so excited that, yeah.
Yeah, and he also added, lastly, that he started to introduce him to Rise of the Kage. That's a ninja game by the same guy who do Bushido, the GCT Studios. And he's now obsessed with black pajamas and being super discreet and super agile.
Yeah. Super stealthy.
Super stealthy, yeah, that's the right word in English.
Yeah. Super stealthy and super agile. That's so funny. Kids are great. The because their imaginations never stop, right?
Yeah.
So way they can take anything and make a story out of it, like, and Emiral's just starting to do that. So it's really funny. Like the other day, she was running around, and she has these plastic eggs she plays with. Like they're, you know, like you get out of the vending machines, like they have a toy inside.
Yeah.
So she has these plastic eggs, and she loves them for some reason. So the other day, she's running around the house, and she opens up the plastic egg and takes one half and like rubs it on a cat. And then she did that, and she goes, one cat, and she goes, the other cat, and she comes to me, and she rubs it on my knee, and then goes, okay, all better, and then moves on, like she's playing doctor with it or something. But and kids can do that with anything. Their imagination never stops.
Yep.
You know, and it's fascinating to see, and I can't wait to the point where I can try her with a game and try some of these, like, storytelling elements and see how she runs with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Steve said, you go something, you pick something that goes with their interest, and then you add structure to their imagination. You use the game for that, to teach them.
So you're saying skills. You manipulate them into liking what you like. Okay, got it.
Yeah, that would be the first step. Solid. That would be the first step. Yeah. Manipulate their interest so at least they pick up the right game. But then you use the gaming, like we said, to teach them some social skills and some mathematics. It's a great possibility. Possibilities are great.
And it's a great hobby for them to take up if they do, because it's not just gaming. There's all the hobby side around it. There's the painting, like we mentioned, the social involvement. Going out away to convention is fun too. So that's something, if he likes it, that's something that would be fun, going on a 2 or 3 day trip with Theodore and go to TempleCon, let's say. And that would be cool. Or even just starting to go to local game store and play a game there with him, or have him play against another adult that's aware he's going to face a young child before. But once he's old enough to be able to game with other people and play on the table next to him, or just supervise and see him interact with people, just the development that it shows is something cool for a parent, I think.
I just had this whole mental image of Theodore playing at the gaming store against someone, and Antoine standing at the table, like, arms crossed over his chest, looking on approvingly. Kind of like, if you've ever seen Karate Kid, the Cobra Kai, you know, dojo master thing. Sweep the leg, Theo. Sweep the leg. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It fits.
We all know you're a cutthroat gamer deep down, Antoine.
Hide behind
the veneer of super friendliness. Right. I think we pretty much said everything we have to say on the topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we've kind of talked about some of the advantages and different, you know, made some suggestions for games. I'd really like to hear if other people have suggestions, you know, games they've tried with their kids or things they've done that we didn't speak about, maybe that were different, that entice their kids to get into gaming or encourage their developing love of gaming.
Yeah, and cool. Don't force it on them, because
you'll ruin it. Just like anything else, you can't force anything on kids, because they'll end up hating it.
Exactly. And
then no one ends up happy. Yeah,
it's not because you like miniature and war game that they're gonna like it, but for sure at some point they're gonna take interest in it, but they may or may not like it. So just don't force it.
Or they may learn like an aspect of it.
Yeah, right? That's what I was thinking.
You know, like Theodore. I like the hobby more than the gaming, but you know, I could end up with a kid that likes the gaming more than the hobby.
Yeah, I have the same exact thing here. Theodore, I've tried painting with him a bunch of time, and he doesn't take it up. He doesn't like it. He do it for 5 minutes max and go over the model, doesn't paint it all, and just get bored. It's not active enough for him. But playing with the dice, moving the miniature, that he likes. So it might change as he gets older, but he might just not be in the hobby side and more into gaming side, maybe.
Yeah.
I'll for teach sure. Him to be a whack player.
You can already see Steve and in the guild ball, right? It's building. He's gonna turn into like a Wes with fantasy. It's gonna be one of those things.
Oh yeah,
where he pretends not to be. Oh yeah, where Steve was funny because he came off as totally not a win at all cost type of guy.
Until you played him.
Until you played him, and you saw it. But he's perfectly pleasant. It was a great experience. But you look at those lists, and you can tell those lists were made to hurt, right?
Yep, that's Steve, all right.
Well, at least it's a fun game.
Yeah, I think it's part of his tactics, right? He gets you at the table, you're kind of mellow, because this guy's like super chill, for sure, it's not going to be one. And then he like tears into you, right? Yeah. You don't know what's happening.
And you like it. That's the worst part.
Yeah, why? He's playing Frozen on the iPad across the table from you. How can you not like it?
I need to find a tune for Guild Ball now.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, you have one.
All right, we're rambling.
Right.
We're rambling at this point. So do we have any shout-outs this week? Anything before closing?
Well, I can do a shout-out to John again because he's going to TempleCon with his kid for gaming. So he's living the dream.
Is he playing Guild Ball at TempleCon?
He's supposed to. But I don't think he said he's may or may not be ready. I'm not too sure. I have to twist his arm a bit to be sure.
Well, worst case, we'll play a casual game.
Yeah, exactly.
Where it doesn't have to be. He can play with paper dolls. It doesn't matter. And he can crush me at Guild Ball because I should be good to go by then too.
But he's going with
the terrain. We can play in our room. It's all good.
Yeah, but he's going with his kid, and the entire family is going to TempleCon. So.
Oh, that's even cool. There you we'll go. Have to do dinner or something as a group.
Yeah.
All right. Any other shout-outs?
Not for me.
I'm just going to give a quick shout-out to Dan over at Gamers Vault because he opened up his new location this week. And tomorrow is the... So we're recording this on the Saturday. Tomorrow is the grand opening. It's the Mark III launch tournament. And also the Taco Bowl Guild Ball tournament Antoine's running.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping everything goes great tomorrow. And it's a fantastic new location. People should go check that out. 1515 DeSalle off of DeCary Street, right across from DeCary Hot Dog. It's going to be a great gaming location in Montreal.
Yeah, it's walking distance. So many great places like Taco Bell. So it's bound to be successful.
And a bunch of different restaurants and a metro station. So.
Yeah, I've never visited yet the location, but I've seen the videos because they're doing promo videos, like teasers, and wow, really.
Yeah, it's
impressive.
It's pretty impressive. Yes. I mean, it's still under construction. It's not quite finished, but it's operational. And even still in its current state, it's pretty impressive.
It's so much potential. That's incredible.
Yeah. That's going to be some great gaming going on there this year. All right, on that note, I guess we'll sign off. Guys, I'll see you all in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye, geeks.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth, or follow us on Twitter at geeksofthenorth. You can follow me, Paul, at PRFilio, Antoine, at Eltonio Berg, Steve, at B_Steve, and if you really feel the need, I guess you can follow Yom. He's at Yomasta. Breaks and outro music by La Drave. You can listen to them at ladrave.bandcamp.com. See you next time, geeks.
Thank you for checking out United Geeks Network Family Member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to UnitedGeeksNetwork.com where you will find Who, What, Why, a game design podcast. A podcast that talks about the ins and outs of game design with game designers. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at UnitedGeeksNetwork.com.